Thank you everyone for coming to my talk today. I'm going to talk about a portion of our lab's research exploring the transcriptome of the glucosinolate myrosinase system, specifically in broccoli. A little background on broccoli first. It's one of several crops in the Brassica oleraceae species. Also, it's highly related to several other crop species in the Brassica genus, as well as Arabidopsis, which makes work from Arabidopsis or the Brassica species interrelatable between many different crops. Specifically, Brassica vegetables have a number of phytochemical nutrients, and our lab focuses our research on the glucosinolates and specifically their hydrolysis products for their cancer chemopreventive activity. So glucosinolates are a diverse class of compounds. The general structure can be seen right here, and different glucosinolates are characterized based upon their precursor amino acid, as you can see down here. Upon wounding or insect damage, glucosinolates are cleaved by myrosinases that are separated in planta, and that produces the aglycone that you can rearrange into several different hydrolysis products. This will come up a little bit later in the talk. These hydrolysis products are related with defense, insect attraction, flavor, and chemoprevention. A number of hydrolysis products have been shown both in vitro and in vivo to have anti-cancer activities. Specifically from the aliphatic glucosinolates, the most potent are sulforaphane and iberin. And in general, the isothiocyanate form of hydrolysis product is considered the most chemopreventive. Sulforaphane is probably the most researched and the most potent chemopreventive agent in broccoli or the Brassica crops in general. PEITC is a hydrolysis product from aromatic glucosinolate, and then a couple indole glucosinolate products, indole-3-carbinol and N-methoxy-indole-3-carbinol. So in order to quantify bioactivity for chemopreventive purposes, we use a QR assay, so that's quinone reductase. It's a mammalian enzyme that is involved in what they call phase 2 detoxification, which is taking toxic compounds, conjugating them, or somehow manipulating them so they can be excreted by the body more quickly. QR activity is generally used as a biomarker because it's been shown to correlate with the activity of other phase 2 enzymes, and it's been shown to be a representative biomarker for anti-cancer activity. The assay, in general, in short terms, uses endogenous quinone reductase to drive the rate of a color change reaction that we can measure with plate readers that allow us to quantify the QR and anti-cancer activity of our hydrolysis extracts from materials. So if we want to breed for increased health promotion via manipulation of the system, there's many things we have to keep in mind. Firstly, manipulation of one glucosinolate can affect others. For vegetable crops, you always have to be worried about flavor and visual quality. Glucosinolates are, as I said, are involved in plant defense, so if we're manipulating that, we have to understand how the manipulation affects the defense properties. And it's regulated by many different hormones, including methyljazonate, which I'll talk about more today. And so we have to understand what affects manipulating these or using exogenous treatments of methyljazonate to manipulate these profiles can have on the further plant. And this is you can see how complicated the cascade is for jasmonic acid here, and it also interacts with salicylic acid signaling and auxin signaling. So getting the meat of this, so the materials and methods, Dr. Kang Moku originally grew this material in 2009-2010 and applied the exogenous methyljazonate treatments. He also profiled the glucosinolates, the hydrolysis products, and the quinone reductase activity of these three commercial varieties, Green Magic, Gypsy, and Imperial. For the work I did is I created QRT-PCR primers for 45 of the glucosinolate biosynthesis and catabolysis genes from cDNA sequences in Bulbase. Those primers were verified for amplification efficiency and specificity using CyberGrain on an AB7900HT system. We used three endogenous control genes that were tested for Brassica oleraceae. So the objectives of this research, we wanted to observe the transcriptional effect of methyljazonate treatment on the glucosinolate myrosinase system, determine if that regulation imposed observed this changes we saw in glucosinolates and the hydrolysis products. Also, we want to identify any differences, if any, between the varieties that were tested. Start with the aliphatic glucosinolates. Dr. Koo reported a significant increase overall in glucorafenin, as well as in green magic in 2010 alone. And as I said, so glucorafenin is a precursor to sulforaphane, one of the most important anti-cancer compounds. And also in the aliphatics, we saw a significant decrease in gluconapin for overall and for Imperial specifically after methyljazamate treatment. And before I get into the whole biosynthetic pathway, just a quick overview. There are four major portions. The chain elongation cycle is in the aliphatic and also shared by the aromatic glucosinolates. There's core structure formation, which is for all glucosinolates, side chain modification for the aliphatic indoles, and then the catabolysis. Within the chain elongation cycle for the aliphatics, we do see several variable responses here. MIB transcription factors are generally known to drive the glucosinolate myrosinase system, and one interesting result here is between two different homologs of MIB28, we see differential regulation by methyljazamate treatment. MIB28.1 upregulated across the board and downregulated across the board for 20.2. I should point out too, the three different varieties, and everything is reported in percent change transcription. general pattern we'll see across the aliphatic pathway is associated, I think, with MIB29 transcription, or related to this. We see upregulation in green magic and downregulation or very little change in the other two varieties. And you can see this in several of the different chain elongation pathway enzymes. And the change in green magic alone may partially explain why we saw the change in glucorafenin only in green magic. Significant change. So the next part of the core of the aliphatic glucosinolate is the core structure formation. Again, very similar patterns to what we saw in the chain elongation pathway, with the highest increase in green magic and little to no change in most of the other two, or for most of the genes for the other two varieties. And finally, the side chain modification portion of the pathway. Same story we see in the FMOGS ox genes, the first steps in this part of the pathway. And this part of the pathway is the most important as far as determining glucosinolate profiles, because as you can see, each glucosinolate is determined by the activity of a precursor or the activity of conversion from a precursor glucosinolate. I mentioned that gluconapin decreased, so one interesting result we saw was that we actually saw increased transcription of this gene, where we would expect to see decreased transcription. So this might be a sign of post-transcriptional regulation that we need to further research. For the indole glucosinolates, there were the largest change observed in this experiment was a large increase in neoglucoprotein, over 200% increase overall. Also, an overall increase in 2009 for glucoprotein, but actually a non-significant decrease in 2010. Again, these are important anti-cancer compounds. So the indole formation pathway. We saw more upregulation across the board with MIB34.1 and 34.2, and this corresponds with our overall increase with neoglucoprotein. In particular, large increases seen in the first step of the pathway here from tryptophan in green magic especially. And ST5A, the sulfotransferase at the end of this part of the pathway, actually showed similar patterns to the aliphatic glucosinolates. Now to explain or try to explain how we saw changes in our glucosinolate profiles, we saw large increases in neoglucoprotein, which is also mirrored by our changes in transcription for CYP81F4 and IGM1 and 2. And actually, it seems we can partially explain the glucoprotein changes as well, because 2009 we see a decrease in transcription, which would lead to more glucoprotein precursor left over, whereas in 2010 there was an increase in transcription, creating more flux through that pathway. and therefore a period of decrease. So besides the glucosinolates themselves, the actual bioactive products are the hydrolysis products. We saw significant increases in several of these, which also correlated with significant increases seen in the QR induction potential and QR activity. So we would expect to see some of that just from the increase in glucosinolates, but another component of this is the percent of isothiocyanate formation instead of other forms of hydrolysis products. We see significant increases across the board for gluconeosertion conversion, and then some sporadic significant increases for glucoraphanin conversion. One thing I didn't talk about earlier is the involvement of what they call specifier proteins in this hydrolysis. So ESP, TFPs, and NSPs can influence the formation of hydrolysis towards these hydrolysis products, and ESM1 is known to block ESP activity and influence the formation back to the isothiocyanate. Our transcriptional results are not as clear-cut as with the glucosinolate biosynthetic pathway. Here, we do see increased transcription for ESM1 across the board, which could partially explain our increase in isothiocyanates, but ESP and, 1 and 2, it's variable response, and it doesn't really, we would expect to see a downregulation with our increased isothiocyanates. So in conclusion, we can see responses to methyljasmate in the transcription for several glucosinolate biosynthetic and catabolysis genes. However, those changes don't always explain our changes in glucosinolates. Differences in homologous genes are interesting and need to be further investigated for the reason for that differential response. Possibilities of post-transcriptional regulation also should be involved in further work. And so our overall conclusion is the increasing of cremobrenum bioactivity through increase of target GSs or hydrolysis products, either through breeding or agronomic practices, seems plausible, but it will be complicated by environmental effects and a lack of heritability for the methanolajasmate treatment response. But if we wanted to move forward in this goal, selection of favorable alleles for the transcription factors or at the branch points of the side chain modification portion of the pathway would be likely candidates. Also, ESM1 loci that have high response to methyljasmate treatments are another candidate. And green magic may be a good source for that, although we need to screen more varieties. This seems to have responses to methyljasmate that we like to see for this purpose. I'd like to acknowledge my committee, the past and present grad students and postdocs in our lab, and any student and all the student help we've had throughout the years, and open it up to any questions if we have any.